Welcome back to another edition of the Wolverine.com podcast. My name is Chris Ballas. With me, Doug Skeen, Michigan's five-time Big Ten champion, all Big Ten lineman, former New England Patriot. How'd your Patriots do this weekend, you know?
I couldn't even tell you, Ballas. I've been so busy.
Disappointing again.
I don't know. Did they win?
Yeah, see,
you know. Hey, I know the Lions won. Hey,
this guy's in the Hall of Honor there in New England, and he can't even check out on his own team. You should be. So amazing. Shane Johnson comes up. But you know what? Before we even start, we're going to get to Shane Johnson's first question here at $4.99. Shane, thanks, brother. Always appreciate it, man. If you guys want to super chat, get to the top and get your question answered, push on the donate button down there, and we really appreciate it. So, all right, Shane, let's do this, because we were just talking about this off the air. Offensive line is just next level. You think we see more jumbo packages, assuming all healthy with eight deep? Gio and Trente, better options over walk-on number 82 in the red zone, walk-on number two being Max Bredesen, actually, who's pretty good. But I'll say this. I couldn't agree more, man. And I wrote this in my news notes, quotes, and observations afterwards, that if this is boring to people, then sign me up, baby. Because when I see guys 4 or 5 yards a pop, and this reminds me, Skeen, of the 1990 Michigan Notre Dame game. You know, everybody thinks of it as the Desmond, not the Desmond Howard game, but the Rocket Ishmael, actually 91. No, it was 89. I'm sorry, the 89 game. It was the Rocket Ishmael game when he kicked off twice and he takes two back. But I think Tony Rice was a quarterback, if I'm not mistaken, or somebody, and they threw four times. And because they could run four or five yards on every play, and there's nothing more excruciating than watching your team give up 4 or 5 yards. You get to third and two, you can't stop them. That's exactly what happened behind this big line. Tell Shane what you told me about number 55 there in the middle of that Michigan offensive line.
Well, I was watching the game on a delay last night and watching it rather closely, and specifically watching Oluwatimi in the middle. I mean, I was just saying, that kid's really good. Is he really good? There was a play down there on the goal line. I scored a touchdown on it. And the way he helped his center, the way he helped his right guard with a nice little shoulder bump, but he didn't lose square in his shoulders or hips. He came up to that middle linebacker, settled his feet, got a base with his feet, locked on with his hands, and that linebacker was eaten alive. And it's textbook center play out of this guy. I keep saying this all year long, but Stardus was second team All Big Ten last year. Oluwatimi is clearly a step up, and that's no disrespect to Andrew from last year, because he's a fine player. But this guy in the middle is the heart of this offensive line. It goes out from there. We have depth. We can run the football, Ballas. And you just said, if it's boring, it's boring. The demoralization that happens to your opponent when you come to the line of scrimmage and they know exactly what you're going to do, and in some cases they're probably calling it out, and you do it anyway for 3, 5, 6, 7 or more yards, and then you tell a dude, yes, we just did that to you, and we're going to probably do it on the next play. So there's no surprises here. And you come up and you do it again. You just see it when you look across that line, when you come up to the line, you walk up there, you glance across that front, and you see those opponents, and their body language is just melting away, and it can just the pain and the resignation of just getting their asses kicked is settling in. It may be boring to us, you know, fans watching the game, but as an old offensive lineman, it is awesome, because I know, although you can't see the faces in those helmets, you know, from the sideline view, it absolutely crushes the spirit of people. It's awesome.
And the fan bases too. And Shane, what about Shane's question here about going jumbo? I'll say this. I like the wrinkles in the red zone. I don't care that it took them four times to get into the end zone against Rutgers. You know what? I agreed with the strategy, because for about 2 or 3 weeks, they get down to the 2 or the 3, and then the first down play, they're losing 3 yards. And then you're like, all right, now your back's against the wall. I'm liking go forward. I don't give a damn if you're scoring on fourth down here. But to his point, you've got so many options. I didn't think Carson Barnhart had his best game yesterday at right tackle. I think Trente Jones is pretty good there. And how about bringing in another guy down there at the red zone and just going jumbo?
Well, clearly Michigan has the depth. So if you've got guys that can get after it out of a 3-point stance, put them on the field. And to your point, yesterday was not without its areas for improvement. Mm-hmm. Barnhart gave up a bad sack because he bent his waist and his head went down and his feet stopped. And then we had Honningford on a play where first and 10, Joel Honningford comes down and absolutely whips on a down block on a defensive lineman. And we got a tackle for loss for 3 yards. So if that's going to happen, then, you know, maybe some other guys need some chances out there. I saw that Trente came back in the game late, and on his first snap out of the right tackle position, you know, he gets a nice hook on a guy, gets that right hand up, gets him turned to the inside. The ball goes outside. Really nice block by Trente there again. Yeah, I think that, you know, put an extra guy out there, get your best blockers down on there. You need them inside the 10-yard line and grind them in there. And if that's the answer, I'm all for it. I answer Shane's question. Yeah, I could absolutely see us seeing more of that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I like the play when they ran straight with McCarthy, a straight quarterback run. Okay, this kid's fast, number one. Number two, you've got a running back in there in Blake Corum. Yeah, Skeen looks like he could drive Black Bruce. I asked Skeen, I said, if they could put you out there for one or two blocks, could you still do it at, what, 52 years old? He said, I'd probably be good for one, he said.
I might be good for one. You know, the problem, Mike, is that my hamstrings would probably rip in half on the first. You know, I'd probably be all right for a down lineman, but if I tried to go up to a second level and get after a linebacker, I don't know if I'd make it at this point.
But I tell you what, yeah, you look everywhere we go, like if we go golfing or something like that, everybody's looking at him. That guy looks like a former football player. And then, you know, and I was like, hey, isn't that Doug Skeen, the Hall of Honor guy from the New England Patriots? And then he turns all red. So.
No, there's no Hall of Honor, no.
There is not, but I'll tell you what, you're a damn good lineman. And he would have had a longer career, folks, if Chester McLaughlin hadn't fallen on his knee. I will say that all the time.
Well, you know, I was sitting on my wife, Tracy, and I were watching the game last night, Ballas, like I was talking about earlier, and it just so happened that, you know, she had a couple questions because I made a comment. I'm like, oh, watch the block on a three technique right here. And she goes, yeah, what exactly is a three technique? So we spent 15 minutes breaking down the defensive lineman numbering system, and then we broke down two or three plays in a row. So, and I just told her, I said, you know, it's kind of fun because of my experiences that I can explain this to people is what I see, because it's really not that complicated. There's only so many hats and so many guys out there. Which angle is you going to take? It's like I used to be told by one of the Dufek brothers when I was at Michigan, he'd always say, hey, Skeen, just remember, it's not that complicated. Right, left, straight, or head. That's it.
Right. And I'm like, I gotta tell you. Do you know how hot that is, though, that she asked you that? No wonder Craig Wada is so infatuated with her. So, yeah. Keep your eye on her, man, because she's a keeper. But I wanted to talk. Blake Corum is an honorary offensive lineman after that pancake block. And I asked him about that in the post game. And at some point, we're going to get here where we can get Hutch in here to play some of these clips that of these guys talking, because you should have seen his face light up. And the last thing he said was, I'm getting a tear here, I put that big boy on his butt, and he did. Tell us what happened on that play. First of all, I love the first down red zone play. We'll talk about the Ronnie Bell touchdown, too, here in a second. But mixing it up a little bit, and a couple guys, at least one guy missed his assignment on that, and Blake Corum had to clean up the mess.
Well, it wasn't a missed assignment. It was a bad technique. So if you go back and watch the end zone copy of the play. The entire Michigan offensive line from left tackle all the way over to the backside tight end immediately takes a wide zone step to their left, and they're all trying to hook block that whole defensive front. And over here on the left, we got our young tight end there, Lovewell, who's supposed to come down, and he's supposed to gap or down block that defensive end. And he kind of misses his target. He doesn't get to the near number with his face. He kind of gets high and backside. And that defensive lineman throws him off, twists our blocker, Loveland, to the inside, and he escapes. That's the guy that Corum ends up cleaning up. On that play, and I went back and looked, I'm like, who is Corum lead blocking for here? Who's he looking for? And I told, again, because sitting there with my wife, we're breaking down the X's and O's, and I said, oh, he's the plumber. He's the plumber on this place. He's like, well, what do you mean? Well, who's the plumber? I said, you know what, plumber? The plumber. They just fix stuff. That's what plumbers do.
This is why Hutch is the best in the business. So, all right, go ahead and play this for us. Are you seriously going to play this? Watch. Everybody listen to this.
When I knock him down, you know what I'm saying? I think it was a great block.
Right there. Yes. And you know what? Corum.
Well, you know, I knocked that big boy on his butt.
Hutch, man, you're a stud. That's unbelievable. You just, I got to tell you, we're going to get about at least 1,000 more views from this just because if we can do stuff like that, that was fantastic, man.
That was great. So, yeah, so the beautiful thing about that is Corum, his stature naturally puts him at a geometric advantage, Ballas, right, because he's lower than that guy. And all he did was get that head down and that shoulder down, and he popped him. Now, he knocked him down. In the old school world of Michigan offensive line play, Corum gets credit for a knockdown on that block. Yes, and now if Corum could have locked on and then driven him down into the ground and did the old belt buckle rub in the face, now we're talking clean pancake, Ballas, and that would have been off the charts. But I would say Corum did pretty good there.
Yeah, you know what they call that today? They call it teabagging, I believe. I don't know if we can say that, you know, but I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming, Hutch. But but that's what the kids call it these days. And yeah, it is humiliation, and it is. This kid was fantastic, man. Yeah, Mike, thank you. I am going to be doing a Manscaped Live read tonight as well, so be prepared for that.
Can't wait. It's one of the highlights of this podcast.
We'll mention some more teabagging here. But regardless, that was a heck of a block, and loved his outfit, man. He looked like Here Come the Mummies, right? Looked like one of the Mummies guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
but fantastic. You know what? I love this kid though, and I asked him. I also asked him. I said, somebody asked him, can you do this, man? He 28 more carries. He wasn't supposed to carry that much this game, but Donovan Edwards got hurt. We'll talk about that in a minute, folks. And they said, can you do 2 more games? And he said, man, come on. He said, I could do it a whole nother season. And as an offensive lineman, that's the kind of guy you want to block for, right? I mean, that's special.
That's absolutely it is. So when your running back grinds the way he does, it feeds off each other. So that whole offensive line unit up front, including the tight ends, when you got a guy or guys like Edwards and Corum back there that grind the yards, especially the ones after contact, how many times, Ballas, do we see Corum lower the shoulder, and then when he has contact, his feet accelerate? Yes. They start chopping the ground even harder. And then you see a couple blue shirts or white shirts if we're on the road come in and jump on the pile and just smash that whole thing forward. I guarantee you those offensive line love that guy for that effort, and they reward him, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And this is why it's so much fun to watch.
And they're moving piles. They aren't waiting. These offensive linemen are not waiting. They are, if they see him and he's got one guy there and he's still moving a little bit forward, guess what? They're all flocking to the pile, and they're pushing for an extra 3-4 yards. Wisconsin did that extremely well against Michigan a couple of times. I'm starting to see this Michigan line take that step, and got to give credit to Sherrone Moore, right? I mean, this guy's done one heck of a job.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Last night, it was, again, watching the film, my wife says, who coaches this offensive line now? And I told her the story. I said, Coach Moore. And she's like, well, how long has he been coaching the offensive line? I said, this is only his second year. And this is only his second year actually coaching the offensive line. I said, I was a guy who wondered about that decision when Harbaugh pulled the ripcord on Ed Warner and moved Coach Sherrone over. And absolutely hats off. Coach Moore has done an outstanding job with this offensive line group. They've responded, and they're getting better, and they're getting better. And you got depth in there now. And so outstanding job. That coach is a guy that's on the rise for sure.
I said, and I've been quoted as saying, this is the best run blocking offensive line I've seen since yours in the early 90s. Now, there were some good ones, okay, the 1997 to 2000. But, you know, even 98, those guys weren't really moving people the way that these guys are, the interior line. And I think a lot of it is Oluwatimi. But I saw a clip of, and maybe Hutch can find this one too, if you can, I'm buying him a case of beer, but of Zach Zinter against Penn State. And unfortunately, that's Hutch's team too. But okay, he finds one guy, one lineman, boom, puts it on his butt. Finds another guy, boom, puts him on his butt. He's got 2 knockdowns on one play. That's got to be good for 2 or 3 helmet stickers there. But this interior line, the way these guys are playing together, and Trevor Keegan didn't even play. Yeah. You got El Hadi in there who plays with an edge too. These guys play with an edge, Skeen, the edge that you always say you're looking for. I just love to hit people is what El Hadi said after the game. I love that kid.
Yeah. So they're all, this is what happens as you get through a season and you're steamrolling the confidence and you're wearing people out. Both of your backs or one of your backs is well up over 150 yards per week. It's a lot of fun, Ballas, having been there and done that. I can tell you it's a lot of fun because you're just demoralizing people right out of the gate. Yeah. But it going back to what you said earlier, it all starts in the center with Oluwatimi in the middle there. His technique is so clean from down lineman to second level linebacker blocking technique. Is really, really outstanding. And then, of course, in the pass protection as well. So, but as we talked about before we came on air here, it's not without areas for improvement as well. Barnhart gave up the sack over there with just a tiny little difference in their balance. That one play, went back and I watched it. And he's clean. And then when you see a lineman drop their head and they bend at the waist and their head goes down, you know it's over. You just know it's so hard to recover from that. And that guy got on his edge, and the rest was history there. But that's the thing, that he'll clean that up. And it's going to have to get better and better as these opponents get tougher here as we get toward the end of the season. But this is an offensive line that is outstanding in their performance week after week. They're having fun. We're having fun watching them, and they just keep getting better. And you can see they're having a good time doing it together. And then, you know, when you got a guy like Keegan at left guard who's hurt, Al Hadi comes in, plays to the expectations of the position. There's no drop off. Corum keeps on gashing for 165 yards or whatever the kid had. It's just great to watch.
That's the thing. This is like the seventh different combination that have started this year because of the injuries and people being banged up. And again, I went back to the 1990s when you guys, somebody would go down, boom, Doug Skeen comes in, and the ball, everything's still working perfectly. And it's like you don't miss a beat. And it was a cliche. And I used to think, you know what, the expectation is for the position. You know what? But you have to meet that standard if you're going to win championships. Well, your backups have to be ready, and they have to play well. And they
yeah,
are.
So it's, I mean, imagine this, right? Let's just put it into these terms. Well, one of our left guard, Keegan's out. Do you think the other 10 guys in that huddle look over at El Hadi and go, oh, well, he's the backup, so I guess we're not going to be able to do these 10 different things? No. Everybody looks at him and says, let's go, man. And he looks at all of them and says, I'm ready. Here we go. There's no drop-off. There's no change. The coaching staff doesn't say anything about, oh, well, we got to take this whole chapter of the playbook out because our left guard is, the backup guy in there. It can't be a drop-off ballast. And you and I have been watching and doing this for a while now. Remember when there were limitations to this offensive line because they couldn't move, they weren't in shape, they had bad schemes, they didn't know where their help was from. And we talked about that for, gosh, a good 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. It was a mess. It's so gratifying to see this is what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, and it's looking great. It's a gift. And speaking of gifts, this holiday season, I'm giving thanks to our friends at Manscaped. If I tell my extended family that I have the Performance Package 4.0 from the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming, not to mention it includes their Lawnmower 4.0, trimmer to tame my bush and score brownie points with the in-laws. Give yourself Manscaped, or the man in your life, for the man in your life who needs it. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with 20% off plus free shipping with the code 20GOBLUE by going to manscaped.com. Again, that's 20GOBLUE. Think your holiday spread is good? It's time to give thanks to the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, or as I like to call it, the perfect package for your package. You know what, inside you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker, ear and nose hair trimmer, which, by the way, I love. I hate to say it as an older guy, it's been fantastic. It's the best one I've ever used. Crop preserver ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. Think of it as a cornucopia for your balls. So there you have it. 20 Go Blue at manscaped.com. Skeen will be sending you another one for Christmas. I'm sure that Tracy will appreciate that as well. So all right, let's talk real quick. You were talking about how guys were not getting to linebackers on Saturday, though. And there's a reason. Okay, Blake Corum still gets his 162 yards, but he did not have a run over 12 yards. And there's a reason for that.
Well, I noticed about two-thirds of the way into that football game, there were several snaps where we're running our base offense, we're pulling a lineman or multiple linemen, tight end action in there as well. But it looked and felt like, after going back and watching them multiple times, we weren't getting to the backside linebacker clean. There were two or three snaps in that second half where we've got a massive positive action on the front side of this play. And here comes the backside linebacker untouched, and he's standing there, and he hits Corum. Now, Corum, being the strong guy that he is, drags him for another 3 or 4 yards extra after contact. But we've got to clean that up somehow. And I went back, and there's a couple plays where somebody went missed assignment because we got two guys blocking one. There was one specific play where the front side linebacker came up in the hole, and the first pulling lineman, which I believe was Zinter, he went up inside the tight end to meet him. And had he just logged that end, if he just logged that thing and let Corum bounce outside, that thing would have gone for 30, 40 yards. But you know, I digress. The play is what it is. But on that particular play, again, we didn't get to the backside linebacker, and he came up there, and we had a gain of like 3 or 4 yards, which is good, but it's not as good as it could be. So I think those are the kind of things that you're going to see Michigan work on this week. I'm sure Coach Moore will identify those things. We got to get to those backside linebackers, because in a couple weeks from now, you're dang right, you're going to need to get to all of them and block these guys if we're going to have the kind of success we're going to have down there. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. So it wasn't perfect, right, Ballas? It was very, very good. Once again, you can see the rushing stats in there. 264 yards rushing is off the charts good. You're going to win a ton of football games by doing that. But in the interest of chasing perfection of offensive line play, there's always something to work on. And we've identified that backside linebacker blocking, and at least last night, yesterday afternoon, there was a few that we missed.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about we'll talk about the passing game in a second. But I do want to talk about C.J. Stokes. I thought he ran hard. This kid. Now there were some huge holes there at the end. Those guys were huffing and puffing on that defensive line. And
Ballas, you know what time it was?
It was chicken sandwich time, man. So, and this segment brought to you by Chick-fil-A and Mr. Spots with the chicken hoagie. But I'll say this. They were exhausted, and you could see it really in after the first quarter. And we were talking to some Nebraska fans and some Nebraska writers, and they said, man, you know, the Michigan linemen were just sitting there looking like they were getting ready to just pounce on the next play. And these guys are huffing and puffing, and you could just see them demoralizing. But CJ Stokes at the end of that game, I like this kid. I think he's got a future.
Yeah, he came in there and had a couple of nice bursts. Again, yes, on the left side of that offensive line, boy, a couple of massive holes in there for him to find that space and take advantage of it. It's exciting to see young guys get in there, Ballas, because they're going through all the drills during the week. Behind Corum and Edwards, Stokes and all the other guys, they're out there working their tails off. They're doing every rep in the weight room. They're doing all the runs. And so when they can get in there and pop a big run, it makes everybody excited because everybody knows how hard they've worked to get that chance.
Yeah, I like, you know what, the All Blues have grown on me. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that last night. Yeah. I was watching, and I noticed that Michigan now puts a midweek, social media alert out there what the uniform is going to look like Saturday. And I thought to myself, well, whatever happened to the simple uniform? But it doesn't bother me, you know. I'm old school classic. I thought, you know, wouldn't it be kind of cool for this last home game if we saw the blue jerseys with the yellow pants, the white socks, and black shoes?
Yeah,
old school, right?
Well, I think we'll see that against Illinois next week. So that's the last home game. So, this is growing on me. If they come out with the yellow jerseys and the blue pants, forget that. No, you don't do that. Don't mess with the jerseys.
No. The blue shirts, it's always got to be a blue shirt at home, right?
Yeah.
Should we take a prediction of what they're going to wear in Columbus, Ballas?
Yeah, and I don't care. I really don't. Hopefully, blue pants, white shirt.
I think
it'll be all whites. And, you know what? Go in there and wear pink as long as you win and dominate the line of scrimmage. That's all I care about. So, all right, what the hell's going on with the passing game here? This is really disappointing at this point. I don't see guys gaining separation. I don't see guys making the tough catches. There was a ball, and on first glance, and I said this, you know what, it looked like Cornelius Johnson. It looked like he overthrew him, but he kind of stumbles out of his break. He doesn't find the ball until the last second, throws his hands up. He's got to start finding the ball earlier and tracking it a little bit better. He's a senior now. I'm not coming down on him. It seems like I talk about him a little bit every week, but you know what, if you want your quarterback to get comfortable, you got to make some of these catches. Even Ronnie Bell had another drop. It wasn't a great pass, but these guys have got to really help. Number one, they've got to get separation on their routes. Number two, they got to catch the ball when it's thrown to them.
Is it safe to say, Ballas, that the wide receiver group is the weakest link of this Michigan offense?
It seems like it, especially with the tight ends banged up like they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it stinks.
I know. Yeah. It's kind of a downer, but could this be the Achilles heel of the Michigan offense? Because if we play a defense that's talented enough to take care of the box without having to commit secondary defenders back there, we may be having some trouble moving the football if we can't get separation and get some first downs through the air. We've got to get our tight end. We got to get Schoonmaker back in there and get him healthy here in the next couple of weeks. So, again, we've kind of been talking about this. I related it back to, you know, why we were struggling in the red zone, because we don't have a big, strong feature receiver or a guy that can go up high and high point and rebound a football with any regularity, it seems. And so we've kind of talked about this all year long. The Michigan receiving core is good. I don't know that I would call them great. They're certainly not game breakers. I don't know that we've, you know, what's the longest pass that JJ has connected all year? And that was a criticism last year of Cade in there. Well, we can't connect on the long ball. Well, we haven't really done that this year either.
No.
And we've tried. And so it just kind of kept on missing. And we went to Anthony a few times over the last few weeks on the deep ball and can't make the connection. And I think that could come back and hurt us at some point. But it ain't for effort, right? It's, I mean, these guys are all trying their butts off, but they're just not getting to where they need to be with any consistency to be a big passing threat. But again, this all comes with a little note at the end that when you can run the football like we do and have, you don't need to press.
No.
And you don't need to continually, you know, demand that you have some dynamic passing game when you're you know, writing off 160, 250 yards a week.
Yeah.
You don't, you just don't. So I don't think that's why I'm not freaking out about it, but I do think it's an area for improvement for sure.
Yeah. And when these guys are getting two hands on the ball, it is much too easy for defensive backs to knock it out of their hands. You know, we've seen that a few times this year. So they did make still Ray. They made a concerted effort. In fact, on one possession, they went three passes, three and out. Can they workshop some more creativity versus U of I? I don't know, but they did try it. And when it didn't work, guess what they did? They went right back to the running game because they knew that Blake Corum was going to be the guy. Now, Donovan Edwards, I think, is going to be questionable for next week, just so people know. So I think you might see a healthy dose of Blake Corum again. Pass, you know, they should be so much better in play action scheme because the running game is so good. That's what blows my mind here. It's almost like, and it almost seems like they're sitting on some of their routes, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well,
when they run that.
So the play action, the lion's share of the play action this year has been to our tight ends, right? Through Schoonmaker all year long. And that guy's got a bunch of catches for a bunch of yards and a lot of them first downs. And Roman Wilson had a hot September. He's kind of cooled off in the big picture of things. And we try to get Anthony involved in this thing. He can't seem to get the ball or get the connection on the route there. He has yet to have the big plays, plural. He's had some, but not enough that, you know, it'd be, I think anybody would point to and say, well, he's our guy on the edge. And so, and Cornelius Johnson, you know, out there on the edge is, you know, put the ball on the ground a couple weeks ago. And, you know, what's the percentage, right? I don't know what the stat is. What's the percentage of us winning on the contested catch?
Not very good.
I don't know that it's very good either. And that's where, you know, the great wide receiving groups separate themselves from the good ones.
Yeah. And passes that have gone 20 yards in the air. I think Cade McNamara was 39% last year. I think it's less than 30 this year with JJ McCarthy, which is crazy. He's, you know, he throws a harder ball, a better ball. He's been too deep on some of them. Again, his receivers haven't done him any favors on some other ones. But it's just not connecting, and I think it will. Here's Brian. Time to bench Cornelius. You know, he's a good blocker, Brian. And here's the thing I'll say is that every week we say this is going to be the week that Andrell Anthony shows something to take his snaps, and I don't see it. He comes in there, and he doesn't get the separation either.
Quite honestly, Ballas, how does Andrell block? I haven't watched.
I think he blocks well, but Cornelius Johnson's doing a hell of a job in there too. Yeah. So, you know what? If you're going to run and you're going to bust some of those plays on the perimeter, you want your receivers. Obviously, they're going to be the ones to spring it. So, and he's done a good job there. And so is Ronnie Bell. You guys can rip on Ronnie Bell all they want to. And yeah, he is kind of what he is, right? I think he still has another gear, and I think he's a pro. I really do. But again, he's like the third best receiver on, you know, some of the better receiving corps in Michigan in the last 30 years of Michigan. And that's not a knock on him because some of those guys were outstanding, but JJ needs to be better too. I don't think there's any question about it. There are times that he misses guys. He's 8 for 17, probably two drops, right? So,
well, but, in a couple of these recent games, Ballas, he's been absolutely destroyed after delivering the football.
Right.
The arm is down. He's been getting hit, and that I keep saying it every week for years. We've been doing this. That can't happen.
No.
That absolutely rattles your quarterback. When he needs that extra half second or second to stand in there and deliver a deeper ball, he needs to know that after he completes the arm motion to throw the football, he's not going to get his head taken off.
Right.
And that's where those late hits on that quarterback from your offensive line, they can't happen. You got to keep him clean.
Yep. I like Tyler Morris. I think he's going to be good. We saw him late. We had heard that they, you know, some of these guys were read the riot act and saying, hey, if you guys want to complain about your snaps, you know what, catch the damn ball when it's thrown to you, you know. And we expected to see some of the younger guys in there. We didn't see that. Ronnie Bell again dropping the ball at the goal line. Boy, I thought they were going to take that touchdown away. To me, that ball looked like it was on the back line. So
from the angle, the only angle that we had, you know, it's there wasn't enough video evidence to overturn it, but it certainly looked like it. And the ball security.
Protect that ball, Ronnie. This is your fifth year, buddy. So, yeah. But 72 yards. You know what? They are what they are at this point. So we'll see if some of these younger guys continue to progress. But yeah, they have not lived up to expectations. So Adam Shepherdson, I saw put something up there as well. We'll get back to your question here in just a second. So I do want to talk now about Mason Graham, because I watched this kid closely when he was in there on defense. And I said it, you know what, we're not prone to hyperbole when it comes to young guys. At times we are, maybe, you know, Darius Clemens was compared to Anthony Carter, and the kid, you know, is the sixth on the depth chart at wide receiver. But Mason Graham, when he came in and in that first spring game that I saw him, I said, this kid, not only is he not out of place as a true freshman defensive tackle, this kid is going to be a stud. He was getting off blocks. He was holding his own against Olu Oluwatimi. And then right as I'm writing my note, this kid goes in there and gets a sack. He had a swim move. He uses his hands as well as any freshman defensive lineman I've seen. Your thoughts on what you've seen from this kid? I'm amazed.
Well, you just nailed it there right there at the end when you said his hands. If you go back and you watch his hand placement on an opposing offensive lineman, not only does he get in the right spot, but he does it with leverage, right? So it's one thing if I were to get into you in your armpit area on the front part of your shoulder pads, which is where everybody wants to be. Mm-hmm. If I get my hand in there on you, but I'm a little high, I don't have the physical leverage. He likes to drop the shoulder and get the hand. And so when he explodes his hips and it goes to do that bench press and extend that arm, he's lifting dudes up that are 20, 30, 40 pounds bigger, heavier than them, longer than him. So he's really, you know, with his wrestling background, I mean, the kid's taking advantage of everything in there, and he's making an impact in the middle of that defensive line, which complements Mozzie in the middle. When those two are in the middle, that's a problem for a center and two guards to figure out how to block those two and try to get to a linebacker. Yep. And so outstanding year. And the scary thing about this guy, this Graham guy here, Ballas, is that he is just a freshman. He's not had the big physical development that he's going to have in a couple of years of a strength and conditioning program. You watch what this kid looks like next year physically, and what he's going to be able to do. It's pretty exciting to think about.
It is. And they're going to be good for several years, and they got to figure out the NIL and the recruiting and everything else. And I think they will, but there is a lot of talent, good young talent on this team. Lamar Sanders, good question. How is Mike Morris? Mike Morris did tell one of my guys in the locker room, he said, I'm going to be okay. You know, I think he was going in there to get my problem, Lamar, was what are you doing in the game with 6 minutes to go up 28 points? And I understand that you want to preserve your big lead and your stats and all that stuff. But at that point, Mike Morris should not have been in the game. And that's something that I would like to see a little bit more substitution there at the end of games, especially when these guys have played so much football already this year. So, but he did tell somebody that he was going to be okay. We saw him limping up the tunnel. So I think if it were something more serious than that, then, you know, like maybe a hamstring, and hamstrings can be nagging, or like an ankle or something like that, then we would know about it. So people are going to ask us about Donovan Edwards as well. We'd heard that he had an x-ray at halftime. It looked like a hand injury to me. So Jim Harbaugh, when I asked him about it specifically, said, I am not ready to talk about that at this point. So I don't think we'll get an update on him. I do not expect him to play against Illinois. You're going to see him. You're going to see them sit out as many guys as they can until Ohio State, if they can get away with it. And it certainly looks like they can now, because Illinois, man, boy, they've gone down the crap here the last few weeks. And on top of that, it looks like they lost Chase Brown, Doug. I don't know if you saw that at the end of the game. He could not walk off the field. It stinks, because you're sitting there thinking, okay, this could be a top 25 matchup against great running backs. So that is an overmatched football team. I'll say it. Illinois is kind of what we thought they were at the beginning of the season.
Well, I think they're still dangerous, Ballas. That team is a program that's in transition toward the upward trend.
Right.
And so I think this could be a game. Yeah, they've lost. They're on a bit of a losing mess here. But everybody's going to be peeking over that weekly schedule into the Ohio State week. And that would be a mistake for Michigan to do that. Going back to the Morris injury, what it looked like to me is he got the old leg whip, right? Two defensive linemen converged to the backside. It looks like he took a shot to the right knee. And although I didn't see, you know, of course, I'm not a doctor. I can't look at this stuff. But having been through a knee injury myself, it looked like it might just be a sprain kind of thing. Hopefully we'll see him in a brace come Ohio State week, and he probably won't play against Illinois. I don't know that we need him against Illinois. But you can't overlook anybody, Ballas, especially when you're so close to where you right where you want to be. So I think the Illinois game, you know, I think Michigan's going to win that game. But to just assume that it's going to be a cakewalk, I think, is a mistake.
Yeah, probably. And you know what? I talked to Jamie Morris on his show last week, and he said, okay, and I brought up Minnesota in 1986. Michigan's undefeated. They weren't perfect, but they were undefeated. And Bo Schembechler, he said, we did a lot more for Ohio State that week, that Minnesota week, that on Saturday they're going into that game, and Bo says, guys, I don't think we're prepared for this one. I don't know if I prepared you well enough for this one. Now, he'd said that before like Northwestern games, and they won 69-0. But sure enough, Ricky Foggy goes out and gets them and beats them. You get the guarantee game with Jim Harbaugh. So I think you're absolutely right about that. Number one, you got to still match the intensity. But this defense is so good, Skeen, that, by the way, you're sounding like Darth Vader. Can you pull that thing away from here?
Sorry.
There you go. That's okay. But they are, this defense is so good that I think that they can, I'm not going to say they can get away with it, but boy, these guys are playing good football.
Well, there's no question about that. And what was the rushing stat that Nebraska had? And
ridiculous.
It was, you know, ridiculously, they couldn't, you know, you see an offensive line. I watch a lot of it, and watching the Nebraska offensive line against our defensive front, there's just no room. There's, you know, you got a little bit of maybe a yard or two. And then between our defensive line and linebackers, there's no space. These guys can't get anything going, and they're not falling forward for an extra 2 or 3 yards. They're not even falling forward for 2 yards. And so credit to the Michigan defensive line. The one thing that's great about it, Ballas, the constant rotations, right? This goes back to last year's defense that was installed by McDonald. Now continuing on this year, you see a constant rotation of guys. They're hustling on and off the field. It looks like they're all in physically good shape at this point in the season. They're playing enthusiastic football, and they're you know, they're dropping stats like, you know, they should be. And so linebackers running free, making plays. Those are the kinds of things you've got to see. The only difference is, I think, as we wind this season down here in these last couple weeks, with the injury to Morris, I think pass rush is always a premium. And so we got to continue to find a way to rattle opposing quarterbacks. And it doesn't have to be a tackle for loss or sack, but you got to get to them and you got to hit them. They have to know you're there. Just like we talked about earlier with JJ, if a quarterback knows you're around and you're going to possibly drill him even after delivering the football, in my mind, that can have just as big of an impact as a sack.
And I thought they did that. And you know what? They flushed him out of the pocket, and there were too many times that there was too much room in the middle of the field, frankly. And that's how they got a big chunk of their rushing yardage. Anthony Grant, I think, had 28 yards on 14 carries, their running back. But Chubba Purdy, all name team here. And I think Logan Smothers was the other guy. One guy, the Fat Boys and a Simpsons character is how we were portraying it up in the press box. But this guy would get out of there, and you've got to have at least somebody's got to be there, right? It's about rush lanes, right? And when you talk about, you can't take, what is it? You can't go around. I mean, you've got to maintain your rush lane so that these guys can't get out of there.
Yeah, they're in defensive linemen work on that a lot. They're given a space that they're allowed to work in, assuming there's no twist or blitz game going on. You have an area that you're responsible for. You're not allowed to go too wide as a defensive end. You obviously have contain. Nothing gets outside of you. And yet you can't go so far that you're leaving, you know, space underneath. And then if you're good enough, every once in a while, you do like we've seen the Michigan players do this year, and we saw Hutch do it a ton last year. You bait that guy wide, you bait him wide, you bait him wide, you get that tackle setting on an extra step or two in his pass set, you make the underneath move, and you set that thing up. Those are the things that obviously have a big impact and make offensive linemen start wondering, oh, crap, he's going to go outside or inside. Because if I'm an offensive tackle and I look out here as, you know, left tackle, and I see a defensive end out here and there's nothing to the outside, I know he's got contain. This guy, by rule, should not be taking an inside go on me. So every once in a while you do that, it freaks guys out. So, but the Michigan defensive line, again, all year has been doing a nice job all year long. You know, we sit there and I don't know that in any one game, Ballas, I sat back and went, boy, we sure do miss Hutch and Ajabo.
Right.
These guys have done a nice job making us kind of forget about those dudes in this season.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens when they get to Ohio State. They're going to have to bring it even more.
Critical.
It is. Yep. And they are going to need some outside pass rush a little bit better. Mike Morris, they're starting to chip him with a tight end or a running back at times. So Yabioki's kind of disappeared here, and they're going to need a little bit more from him, in my opinion, here down the stretch. Let me ask you this, because Jim Harbaugh, when he talks about adjustments and things like that and wrinkles, it's not always the obvious, right? It's not like, hey, all of a sudden you're seeing, a throwback pass or something like that. We still haven't seen the screen, but what are you seeing? Are you seeing any wrinkles in the run game where they're doing something different? There were a couple. I mean, to me, it seemed like business as usual when they lined up.
Absolutely, was. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same schematic design. You're down blocking one side. You're pulling a lineman or two or a combination of tight end over there to block the end of line, the opposite color end of line, or the front side linebacker, or both, depending on if you're bringing two guys. Normally what they do is you block down on the front side, tackle tight end guard, to take the three technique, down lineman or nose guard to backside linebacker. The first pulling lineman has the defensive end to kick him out, create a gap on the edge, and then the next guy's got that front side linebacker. It's old power football is all it is. The curveball to the whole thing, Ballas, is the zone.
Right.
And we saw the touchdown that JJ scored on. That was a wide zone play with a down block on the front side that wasn't the cleanest, and that's why Quorum cleaned that thing up at the end. That is the curveball to what Michigan's done. There is nothing dramatically new that I've noticed at all.
So if you do want to change it up in the run game for an Ohio State, what do you do? If you're doing something different in the running game that you haven't shown all year without getting too – you don't want to get –
I don't know that there is, Ballas.
Okay.
I mean, this is what Michigan's made a living on. I don't think you go into Ohio State saying, hey, it's Ohio State, so let's try to do something that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
I think you line up, just like I was talking about earlier, you go into the horseshoe and you look across that defensive front and you say, yeah, we're here. I'm going to take this gap step with my left foot. I'm going to block your hip on the way to that backside linebacker. I'm going to whip your ass and I'm going to do it again. I don't think you need to reinvent anything. Now, the only variations would be, what do you play action off of those dominant run plays? That's all I can think of.
Yeah, and they've got to start. Taking advantage of that. They got to do better getting these guys open and scheming these guys open. And maybe we'll see some different routes and things like that. But it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of respect for the Michigan receivers. Guys, they were playing them tight. Challenging them to get off them, get behind them, get off the line. So these guys have got to start making some more plays. And of course, you miss Luke Schoonmaker in there. There's no question about it. Colston Loveland's going to be very good. Max Bredesen's okay. Eric All's not out there right now. So, but you got to get him back. And he's got a shoulder. I think it is, and I believe somebody saw him in a sling, so we'll see if he comes back next week too. By the way, guys, it sounds like Keegan may well be back for Illinois, which would be good news too. So they're going to need him for Ohio State. So your thoughts on the rest of the Big Ten, man? Boy, there aren't Maryland gets shut out again. It's amazing because each time it seems like one of these teams is set to step up, then they just crap the bed. You look at Illinois, all they had to do was win and beat Northwestern, and they win that division. The West is terrible.
Yeah, I think the Big Ten is exactly who we think they are, right? So the old coach, the NFL coach there, Dennis, what was Dennis's last name?
Dennis Green.
Ohio State and Michigan are the top two. Then you have Penn State, Michigan State, obviously. Credit to Michigan State after the debacle in Ann Arbor getting beat. They're finding a way to win. They're going to try to get to a bowl game. So they're showing a little bit of life. But the rest of the league is like, who's out there that's impressive? The West, just when you think someone's making a move, they're not. Everybody's forgotten about who was probably supposed to contend over there.
Right.
Roll the boat guy, lost a game or two that he probably shouldn't have. Purdue, if you fall asleep on them, they'll sneak up and beat you. But there's no one in the West that makes anybody have any interest. So whether it's us or Ohio State in that Big Ten championship game, it should be another rout in favor of the Big Ten East team. And, it just sort of is what it is. I don't think it's good for the Big Ten. I think it'd be nice to have some powers in the West, but we just don't right now.
Yep. And now we're still waiting on the Big Ten to talk about what happened in the tunnel with the Michigan State game. The police report has gone to the prosecutor. We heard from a very good source that it's any minute now. We keep hearing that we're going to be hearing from the Big Ten. Number one, it's ridiculous, as John Bacon wrote in his outstanding column today, that we haven't heard anything yet other than we are aware of an incident which happened. You know, they put that out there about an hour afterwards. Now, and you probably didn't read this today, Skeen, but there was in Bacon's report, somebody from the sidelines on the crew and one of the officials, and it was a couple of different people that wrote letters saying that they were, some of the MSU staffers allegedly were yelling "break his bleeping arm" when JJ McCarthy was running, and another one said "take that midget's knee out" when Blake Corum was running the ball, an MSU staffer. This is allegedly.
This is coming from the sideline during the game.
Exactly. From somebody who actually worked the crew and wrote a letter to the Big Ten, and John Bacon confirmed it with this person who's been doing it for 33 years. Somebody I know pretty well, as a matter of fact, went to a different school, for those thinking, hey, this is, you know, Michigan slappy, so on and so forth. Your thoughts on that and how this is really, that's just another step towards a bad, I mean, there's certainly trash talk within the course of any game, but certainly to me that crosses a line.
Well, it clearly it does, right? And we talked about this the week of the Michigan State game and what happened afterwards. It's different for me to talk about it now as a middle-aged guy that's been removed from the game of football for a long time. But if I take myself back into the early 20s, when you're playing in that game, which is a very, very emotional game where you want to literally rip people's limbs off and beat them with it, I understand it. But it doesn't mean it's just Bush League, right? It's Bush League, whether it's both ways. And you shouldn't play the game that way. You shouldn't coach your guys that way. But Ballas, you and I talked about it. In the game, you know, in the game that I played, and we had guys diving at our knees. So we didn't hear it from the sideline or anybody out there vocalizing, hey, let's go, you know, take somebody's leg out. But that kind of stuff has happened. It's not new. I think the only thing that's different and it's new is that you're hearing people say it out loud. But that stuff has physically been going on a long, long time.
Yeah, and it's like people said, I read John's blog, and I did too. We didn't do anything with it. I didn't think it was our place to do anything with it because there's already so much vitriol out there. You know, you have people in your DMs and everything. You know what? You suck. I hate you. Everything else. And it was crazy. It was crazy. And now John Bacon writes this, and John Bacon, everybody respects John. So if you do read the Bacon report, and I will send you a copy of it, it makes you wonder even more what they are waiting for, the Big Ten. And again, we did hear from very good sources yesterday on the sideline that Michigan is expecting the Big Ten to come down here in the next couple of days at the very latest with some kind of a response. So, and I couldn't agree with you more, blank name, right? It is cowardly. Yeah. And coming from staff as alleged is really despicable.
Well, so you know, after the Michigan State football game, Ballas, and the stuff that went on afterwards and stuff that went on the field, there are two guys that can fix this, and it's going to take two guys, more than two, but there's two that need to fix this. Mel Tucker and Jim Harbaugh. They need to lower the rhetoric and issue an ounce of respect for your opponent and you just let your team and do the best you can to get your team ready to go beat the crap out of them when you get a chance to play them in between the white lines. It's far more gratifying to beat someone within the rules and beat the crap out of them within the rules, just like I talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. Hey, newsflash, we're going to run 47G right here, Mr. Linebacker, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you just, again, Ballas, you demoralize people, you embarrass them in front of their girlfriends and their parents. What more can you do to someone? Right. Unless you want to cross this line and do some criminal activity where you're intentionally going to hurt somebody. But then, you know, let's say you do. Let's say you crack somebody's knee and you end their season. Are you happy about that? Because if you are, you're some sort of special size loser at that point. This is just not something that anybody should aspire to do or stand on the sideline and yell for someone else to do. You have to be, like I just said, you got to be a first class loser to kind of do that kind of thing. And it just, I hate to hear it. It bothers me because, as Lloyd Carr famously said, the game deserves better.
It does. And what else you can do is you can teabag. And if you're going to do that, you should probably manscape first. And real quick, the Performance Package 4.0 also includes the weed whacker. So to chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear, this nose and ears hair trimmer uses a 9,000 RPM motor powered 360 degree rotary dual blade system to provide proprietary skin safe technology, which helps prevent nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate holes. It really does work. And can't forget the Manscaped's liquid formulations either. They're like pumpkin pie and ice cream after Thanksgiving dinner. So 20 go blue at manscaped.com. Don't forget about it. Skeen will get you with some more of that as well. These guys do a great job. So please support our sponsors, everybody. And again, thank you for joining us on a Sunday night. I know that some of those NFL games are going, and the interaction's been outstanding, guys and gals. We appreciate you. So join us next week. We got two more weeks, Skeen, before the big one. I can't even believe it. Less than 2 weeks until we are in Columbus.
Ballas, and I just said, I was just telling my wife, I was like, there's only 2 weeks left.
It's crazy.
Where did fall go? What happened?
I know.
Weren't we playing Colorado State just a couple weeks ago?
Yes. It seems like it. And it blows my mind. And every year goes faster as you get older, kids.
It does.
So just ask Doug Skeen. So Sam, go blue. Appreciate you.
Sam.
And really, everybody, appreciate it. And we will talk to you next week.
All right. Go blue.